Google's always changing. There's algorithm tweaks. It feels like almost daily. A lot of times we don't notice them. If you're deep in the industry, then you'll see some of the bigger ones that hit. But advisors are starting to realize that. And the important thing there is the outside financial industry, everyone's behaviors and expectations of what it's like to interact with a business of any kind or buy things or work with anyone is coming to the financial industry, and it has been for years. So you can go to Amazon.com, look for a coffee maker, see 1,000 coffee makers, 5,000 reviews, 1 to 5 star, everything filled out, full reviews, amazing pictures. And we have that experience and we expect that in the financial space. And so we expect that from our advisors.
Welcome to the Active Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Harbor Capital. Join us as we learn from pros who have helped thousands of investors live better lives. I'm Brian Moore, and I'll be chatting with some of the brightest minds in the financial advisory business, bringing you insights on practice management and investment research that works for advisors and their clients. Joining me today on this episode of the Active Advisor Podcast is Matt Kress. Matt is a dynamic professional with a passion for growth, relationship building, and making a positive impact by helping busy financial advisors and their marketing teams convert their website traffic into profitable leads and helping them launch growth systems. With a diverse background spanning various industries, Matt brings a wealth of experience to the table. His journey includes co-founding and successfully selling Relately, relate.ly, for those who are listening, a smart relationship management software, and played a key role in the acquisition of Credible, a technology-enabled practice management firm. Matt also helped start Bunnell Idea Group, an innovative business development training firm, and over the years, he's helped hundreds of financial advisors and other businesses grow by adapting their prospects' buying behaviors and improving their sales and marketing processes. Matt's primary focus today revolves around combining accurate data, strategic thinking, effective processes, and the power of people to drive growth for advisory firms. Join us as Matt shares his insights, experiences, and the joy he finds in working with fun people and making a positive impact in more ways than one. Welcome, Matt, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
It's great to finally get you on. I know for all of our listeners out there and then people watching on YouTube, Matt and I had the chance, privilege actually, on my part, to work with Matt at a former place. So I've seen firsthand what he can do, you know, when looking at advisors' portfolio. I guess when I say portfolio, I mean visual, whether it be social media and their websites. So really looking forward to kind of getting you to share some of your knowledge and insights today, Matt.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, I've got to start because what some people may not know about you and they may not know, I don't believe it's actually even mentioned on your LinkedIn, is that you're big into playing adventure sports. Would love to hear which one you're into these days and how long you've been into it and, you know, what your pursuits are.
Yeah. You know, it's always fun. I love the questions that aren't just, oh, give me a chronological background of what you've done. So right now I'm really big into obstacle course racing and running. I actually met my wife through, people know Spartan, kind of obstacle course races. I've met my wife through doing that, and I've competed in different events around the US. I went and did the European Championships in the Alps in Italy. So a few years back. So that was a lot of fun. I have background in like these weird sports. I played ultimate frisbee for anyone who might know that at a really competitive level around the world. And I played professional paintball. A lot of people didn't know it exists, but it's really expensive to play paintball. And we were sponsored. I played out of a team in Atlanta and LA, but that was a long time ago now. So yeah, I've done a lot of different weird things now with everything going on, just trying to run and do obstacle course races when I can.
You know, the Spartan events, it's funny, I follow Joe on social media and he really, he's quite a motivator, but definitely I think, you know, one of the things he brings to it is this kind of this engaging personality. And speaking about social media presence, he's all over it. Typically here on the Active Advisor, we like to start, you know, the episode with one question. What's the first memory you have related to money or investing?
Yeah, I love the question. So my first memory actually goes back to, it was 2011. It wasn't even that long ago, I guess 12 years now, but or 13 years. But my dad bought me stock of a pharmaceutical company that was really aiming to cure cancer. I think the price per share was just around $6 then. It was just thousands of dollars in stock for my sister and myself. And we watched it go. We watched it rise, watched reports, always followed the research, everything. Over $100 a share at near its peak. And then we watched it drop. Fall. And it was one of those things where I was like, oh, it's always going to come back. Didn't come back. So it wasn't until like $25 a share that I did something with it. Now it's under $1. So it's funny having the discussion and me working with advisors is like, I am not the best at this, but it was something that was interesting. I believed in it, watched it. And so it's just a good experience and lesson for me.
I think it's funny when everybody kind of talks and kind of, you know, looks back at that one point, that one kind of seminal moment in their lives where they're like, oh, wait, let me actually start thinking about this in a different way. And let me kind of start, you know, taking a deeper dive in it all in our own way. So it really kind of becomes, you know, interesting to hear that story. And you find that there's probably some nugget there, at least in talking to other advisors and guests on the podcast, that really kind of that theme carries through.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that defines a lot of like why I like doing what I do. I also got into Bitcoin really early, rode a bunch of waves, but things could look a lot different if I was a little smarter, different at the time with everything. So, yeah.
Well, there's always tomorrow.
Always.
But one of the things I find most interesting about your background is the research you did at a firm called Credible. Now, we met shortly after that, but I would love to hear more about your background, what led you kind of to be on that team and really interested in that area. And also the research that helped shape your perspective on the financial industry.
Yes, great question. So in 2015, I was selling my software company that I co-founded with a friend. And I joined a company, a startup called Credible. And the whole idea was really starting with data and research, more research than you would ever think you could have on a set of people to understand a little bit more about why they buy, their whole buyer journey, everything that causes them to say, you know what, I want to hire this person and everything along the line. So we worked with different verticals at first, but we partnered with a major wirehouse to really dive deep, do a massive research set on prospects of advisors, over 5,000, looking at them either while they're in their journey or just going through it to say, okay, what are the events in their lives that are causing someone to say, you know what, I'd like to talk to someone. I need a little bit of help, all the way through the steps to saying, okay, I'm going to contact this advisor. I see myself trusting them. And then I want to start the conversation and move forward to hiring them. So we didn't always have the in-person, how did that advisor do? Did they convert those well? But we saw everything that led up to it. And we could start really pinning down and narrowing down the whole buyer journey for a prospect, whether it was cold or referral, every step along the way. And we started seeing that and realizing how impactful it was for advisors just to understand that and understand how to apply it to help them grow their business.
The main focus, I guess, in your area has really been kind of, you know, combining data, strategy, processes, and converting that into how people, I guess, are using, you know, making their final decisions to drive possible growth on whatever the other side of that is, which in this case was kind of financial advisors. When you think about an advisor's online presence, what are some of the key areas advisors should be focusing on to optimize their presence? Now, I know, would love to hear kind of what the data showed initially and what kind of working and, you know, working with advisors over the year, did you find that really kind of backed up what the data showed, or did you experience and learn anything else?
Great questions. So, man, there's a lot there. The data really showed that in general, a lot of advisors thought they were differentiated, but to prospects, they looked the same. A lot of advisors still have just lists, bullet point lists of here are the services we offer. There's a contact page, there might be a form, and there's a submit button. Who knows how long it's going to take to get back in touch with them or anything about them. And then there's more we's than you's on the advisor website. And so prospects struggled. They had anxiety when they were having events in their lives, whether there was like a uh-oh moment, things like losing a job or some really big financial change or whatever, or just enough of these trigger events that snowballed, whether it was turning a certain age, thinking about getting a vacation home, or just can they retire with confidence? And as prospects were going through to look at advisors and evaluate them, one, they didn't know how to find them. They didn't know the right questions to ask advisors. They thought that they might get charged more or be taken advantage of if they didn't ask the right questions. So there's a lot of anxiety in that process. And that really showed in the data. And so people were just anxious. They didn't know. And so when we kind of applied that and we looked back and said, and I think back to all the advisors I worked with, the 250 plus, when I look back, then I realized most advisors do kind of look the same. We did a study looking at many thousands of advisors' websites, and one specifically at one, a very large firm that have templated sites, 55% of advisors had the same exact mission statement. So how do you differentiate that? And so when we started realizing that advisors, whether on the independent or whatever side they're on, they looked similar, but that started to apply and match up with the research. And so, yeah, it was interesting that they were similar, but I did start, and there has been a big shift in the industry that advisors are now realizing more and more there needs to be some changes here or there that they can make, especially for their prospects.
I know when we had the chance to work together, and that was a couple of years ago, I'm sure things hopefully have changed, maybe not, but would love to hear your thoughts. I think when we were talking before and kind of working together, one of the things that we really talked about was kind of when you had those seminal moments in your life where there was an event, an external or internal event to the family or to the individuals that prompted them to look to seek out an advisor. I think one of the things that obviously I remember we talked about all the time was family and friends, parents, kind of. And then you went to everybody's favorite search engine, Google.
Yeah.
And have you seen advisors, you mentioned about it briefly, have you seen advisors really kind of start to kind of understand that we need to do, and maybe probably more at the independent level, but we need to actually start beefing up, you know, that on our online presence. So the Google, actually you taught me all this, but there's a spider or something. I remember you're saying that kind of goes through every couple of days or nightly and categorizes everything by keywords and searches and locations and everything.
Yeah, Google always changes. And I'll go back, I'll answer part of your previous question. Google's always changing. There's algorithm tweaks. It feels like almost daily. A lot of times we don't notice them. If you're deep in the industry, then you'll see some of the bigger ones that hit. But advisors are starting to realize that. And the important thing there is the outside financial industry, everyone's behaviors and expectations of what it's like to interact with a business of any kind or buy things or work with anyone is coming to the financial industry, and it has been for years. So you can go to Amazon.com. Look for a coffee maker, see 1,000 coffee makers, 5,000 reviews, 1 to 5 star, everything filled out, full reviews, amazing pictures. And we have that experience and we expect that in the financial space. And so we expect that from our advisors. And so when we have these trigger events in our lives as a prospect or prospects of advisors, they're doing two main things, right? They're either going to Google and typing in just right off the bat for a cold search. They might be an executive and they might say something like advisor helping executive compensation or 10b5 wants, whatever, there's the specific thing they're looking at, business owners, et cetera, just people. Or, so that's a cold search, or they're starting with referral. The majority of people start with referrals, about 70%. That number is dropping slightly, more trying to find advisors on their own. But even when they get referrals, they get 2.6 referrals on average, or close to 3 referrals on average. And they're going to Google, like you said, typing the advisor's first, last name and location, or first, last name, and firm name. And what shows up on that front page of Google search results is the advisor's first impression. So that's how you're being trusted, how you're being seen by your prospects. And so there's a few things that are really important there, kind of going back to your question. So your local business listing, that's very important. I know there's a lot of hesitation to have those and even think about, hey, what if we get reviews here? We can't manage those. Google owns it. I see a lot of, especially independent advisors, but even all the big advisors under very big firms, they have local business listings, there are reviews there. Google manages that. Now, don't comment on them, but the more of those you have and the more 5-star higher reviews, then the more favorable you're going to be seen in prospects' eyes. So local business listing on Google is extremely important. Uploading new photos of your firm, your team, smiling faces are really important. LinkedIn profiles, even if you don't post on LinkedIn, if you're an advisor, you say, you know what? I don't want to deal with it. My clients aren't there. What shows up on Google search results, content that you control, there's a LinkedIn profile generally for every advisor that shows up and it's yours. So you get to put it there. And Twitter, I'm seeing that here and there, a little less now, but or x.com, like that's still there. So you control that content and you can paint yourself in a favorable light to your prospects using that. And obviously like your website and then other like validation, third-party validation and trust building sites can show up as well. Bad things also can show up as well. So you want to own as much of that content that you can to try and push anything that potentially is neutral or negative off that front page.
No, that's an excellent point. And I think, yeah, you highlighted it very nicely and kind of once you survive, pass that first step, i.e. they click on your website, would love to kind of hear from you. You mentioned earlier that 55% of advisors at this firm you were looking at all had the same mission statement. I'm assuming that also means they had a higher propensity for having the same, I guess, landing page. Would love to hear from you kind of what are, I guess, 3 things, not only from your research, but also from yourself when you were looking 12 years ago to talk to an advisor that you believe are must-haves, that, you know, that advisors really need to add to their website and that they tend to overlook?
That's a great question. I love it. I would say, so first off, The single most important thing I would recommend any advisory firm having on their website is a process page or working with us page, however you want to call it, a get started page, whatever it is. But it needs to be in a step-by-step format that talks about what are the steps of becoming a client, and then what do I expect? What can a prospect expect going forward? It could be as simple as 3 steps. It could be 5, but it could be step 1, getting to know you call, or an introductory consultation, or a second opinion, whatever you want to call it. And then bullet point out, here's some things that we're going to ask. Here's some things that some prospects typically ask us. And then if it makes sense to move forward, we'll move forward. Second step, financial planning call. Third step, it could be, hey, we become a client. And whatever that looks like at whatever the advisor's level, this is how ongoing communication typically goes on. Just to give people a sense of what it's like to work together, it reduces a lot of anxiety that people have in that process. And it gives you a rallying cry. That first step, it allows you to put it everywhere. Put the call to action on your LinkedIn bio. Put it on the bio on your website under About You on the homepage. It allows you to start really saying, hey, if you're interested in scheduling whatever the first step is, an introductory call or a second opinion call, do that here. And so then it allows you to just start asking for that next step in the process to help people get a better understanding of what it is, the value they get out of it. And it's a lot easier from just behavioral science to take a small jump, a small step forward, work together a little bit, a little big step forward, work together a little bit, financial plan, a little bigger step forward, become a full client, right? Than it is to go from nothing all the way to becoming a full client. And so you just want to really add that value step by step and really focus on not the whole picture, but just what is that first next step I want someone to do, and be very clear about that. So that's a lot. But the first thing, process page. The second thing on a website is having some way to get either create a distribution list, email list, add value some way, whether it's sign up for a webinar, download this ebook we put together that also is sold on Amazon, whatever, like create some sort of distribution list however you can. You never know when someone's going to turn into a prospect and want to contact you. It could take months or years. 77% of the prospects took between 1 week and 6 months to even contact an advisor. So you want to stay top of mind. And then the third thing on the website is just convert a lot of your current messaging from we to you. So focus more on your prospects. Don't say at XYZ Capital or at Crest Capital, we do this, we do this, we do this. Focus on what the prospect can get out of working with you, whether it's just feeling more safe and secure in retirement, whatever it is, focus on that outcome and then be that bridge from where they're currently at to getting to the outcome.
Now, did you find that, I guess, you know, a lot of advisors, it's interesting. I think we both talked to probably a good amount over our careers. You find some that are really kind of generalist, and then you find some that kind of focus on a specific niche. I know when I was down in Texas, you definitely had a lot of people going after oil executives or people that worked at oil companies. Did you find that helped as well? I mean, really kind of saying this is what, or even doctors, you know, this is what, when you're looking at that process page, also letting whoever it is that's doing the research on you know that this is kind of what I specialize in. I think this is, you know, what we've seen in this day and age is everybody's, the specialization is getting larger and larger. Not that everybody specializes in everything, but like more and more people are actually getting, you know, their focus kind of on a more granular level.
Absolutely. And I would say it's a lot of people shy away from it. And a lot of advisors I've talked to are scared to narrow down, specialize. But it's incredible once you do that, because the more specific you can be to the types of people you work with and help and their situations, then the more those people are going to say, you get me. I want this advisor. As they're like researching, evaluating, this person gets me. They understand me. I could see myself working with them. Especially when you think about if they say, hey, we work with successful executives or busy executives to do XYZ, then your mind starts going down this indirect path of, okay, if they've been in business for a while, they've been an advisor for a while, they work with executives, they say they do. That means executives are kind of happy with them if they keep working with them. So if they're happy, that means they've done well for them, et cetera. And so that just kind of goes down this path of helping people say, okay, this person is right for me. I have worked with advisory firms who made the switch from general to specific. So there's one who was a naval nuclear engineer. On his website today, he was very broad in general. And I remember we had a conversation and he was all in. He was like, okay, I'm all in. He made the switch to saying, you know what? I forgot the exact wording on his website. Made the switch to saying, I'm a financial advisor for, I think it was just specifically nuclear engineers. he started getting referrals from around the US because people saw that and said, oh, someone I worked with or I was served with or whatever, they started referring to this person just based on him saying, I work with these types of people versus a very generic statement. So the more specific you can be, I mean, and now he's just growing really well, but the more specific you can be as an advisor, I'd say that is something that's great. And the worst case, if you try and narrow down a little too much, just change your website in 3 months and try it again or try something else or try a different messaging. So there's ways that you can test it as well without worrying about, is your practice going to end, right? Like, that's not going to happen.
Well, I think we've talked a lot about websites, but you mentioned also earlier on LinkedIn. I think we did talk about that briefly. And I know when we worked together, you had us do a lot of things to our LinkedIn. And I think one of the things that advisors are always trying to look for ways to do is to add value to their clients and prospects through content. I think LinkedIn is probably one of the easier ways to add value, whether you can post, whether you're doing something, whether it's hosting an event or kind of, you know, where you're going to be at. Would love to hear kind of some thoughts around LinkedIn, and would love to hear if you could walk us through what you call the five whys exercise and how advisors can use this approach to add value to the prospects.
Sure. I'm going to put you on the spot with that one, but we'll get there. It'll be a fun little...
Oh, boy. Well, just remember, anything that I did to my LinkedIn, you probably had a hand in it, Matt. So I'm just going to blame you if anything goes wrong. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, fair. So yeah, LinkedIn, there's very specific things. There's a lot of research. We tested a lot of headshots, split tested things. But the most important thing is make sure your pupils are visible on headshots. Crop it right at the shoulders, right above the head, and try and minimize any distractions in the background. Just like when we're in person, we're seeing someone on the street, you're like very quickly, your mind is going, can I trust them? Can I not? Are they friendly? Are they not? And we're looking at pupils to do that and warm smiles to do that, right? So make sure there's crow's feet in your eyes. You have this warm smile. Your corner of your mouth is turned up a little bit. You can show teeth or not. I would recommend showing a little bit. But yeah, dress like business casual or professional how you would in the first meeting for the headshot. For the headline on a LinkedIn profile, some very big firms are keeping advisors to advisor name and title at firm. That really doesn't help a ton. What you really want to do is have the headline be flipped so people immediately see the types of people you work with and how you can help them. So it could be as simple as instead of saying first name, last name, and title, say something like along the lines of, I help executives and their families build their life legacies and feel more confident in their retirement. Something very specific. I work with these types of people. And you could just say individuals and families looking to retire or retirees or whatever, but specific of the types of people you work with and then how you can help them feel what you can help them get out of working with you. From there, LinkedIn summary. So you'll see there's two or three sentences, depending on what LinkedIn is showing, that's visible right away. You want to start those first one or two sentences with something more connecting with you. Most advisors say third person. First of all, you want to be first person. So I do this. This is your page. Our research found that was important. But start off with something connecting, a story, why you became an advisor, two sentences even that just say why you became an advisor and why you like working with people so that people are more likely to hit that more button to read more. And then you could have proof points, years of experience. If you're on any top best in state advisor list, definitely put that. Then bullet point and say, these are the types of clients we work with. Use bullet points in your LinkedIn. You can copy paste it from Microsoft Word and it pulls people's eyes there right from a paragraph. So really try and pull people's eyes. And then at the end of that summary, put in next step. If you're interested in setting up a second opinion, go to here to get this. Go to the website here, schedule an introductory call and use that rallying cry before we talked about with the process. So those are the most important things on LinkedIn. I wouldn't stress too much about much further down the page. You could put some experience there, try and put a call to action as well. But those are the most visited parts of someone's LinkedIn profile or the headshot, the headline, and that summary as well.
No, I think those are all great parts. And I like to think mine's pretty good and accurate. If I recall correctly, I think one of the things I remember you talked about in that summary part there was to talk a little bit about yourself, if you can. Really kind of, again, you're trying to personalize or humanize yourself is probably a better way of saying it and kind of give them something. So like this person who is a nuclear engineer, I'm sure they probably had something in there about that that makes the prospect think they get me.
Yeah. And I forgot to answer that. And then we jump into the five whys too. Absolutely. So there's a lot of behavioral science. The more quickly and the more someone can find an uncommon commonality with you. So something that not everyone shares with you. When two people have that, they are more likely to trust each other and quickly build a relationship. There was a study done where people were basically put in different rooms at different times, and then they would be followed up. So people were put in a room. They said, hey, network, talk to each other. After 30 minutes, I forgot the exact timeline, they got out of the room, and researchers said, well, how did you trust them? How'd you like them, et cetera? And it was kind of a meh response. And then later, they did a few different ones. And one specific one, they said, going to the room, you all have similar fingerprints. And so they networked, they talked. And then after, when the researchers asked them about it, they liked each other a lot more. And it was everyone, not similar fingerprints, right? But kind of similar at the same time. And so similar is like you were asking me about sports activities. When I find an advisor who likes obstacle course racing or running, like bigger ultramarathons or like longer runs and stuff, and we can share a quick discussion around those, then we really quickly like build this sense of trust. So as an advisor, don't just say, I like fitness or I like food or I like traveling, but add something specific. I like hole-in-the-wall restaurants with this type of food, khao soi from Thailand, Northern Thailand, or I'm trying to qualify for Boston Marathon. Something more specific that is a little more uncommon than most and is really helpful there. So I would definitely put that on your bio on the website and LinkedIn. But jumping into five whys. So this helps advisors and it helps us just turn messaging from generic into very specific messaging that resonates with our prospects. So five whys, you can think of, it came from the Toyota Motor Corporation as a way to really find a lasting solution to a problem. So diving deeper, asking why. So Brian, I'm going to put you on the spot with this one. We'll walk through it. Think of short answers, but I'm going to ask you why five times. And I'm going to start with one question. So if, say, you're an advisor on your website, you say, hey, we do financial planning with executives. You could think of Jade Smith. She's an executive. We do a financial planning for her and her family. So instead of having the message, we do financial planning on the website, we want to turn that into something that is more exciting and interesting and really resonates. So the first question I'll ask, the first why is, and just give short answers. Brian, why is financial planning important for Jane, your client?
I think to better help them understand and navigate the road ahead towards retirement.
Okay, so that's the first one. So better help understand, navigate the road ahead towards retirement. Why? So the second one is, why is it important that they better understand and navigate the road towards retirement?
I think there's a lot of things and variable, you know, outcomes for picking different investments and making different business choices and longevity expectations.
Yeah. So then, great. So then the third question, why is it important that they consider different ideas and ways of picking investments and longevity circumstances?
Well, it's their job. So they're going to be much more up to date on what's out there and the different, you know, avenues and approaches and I guess processes than I am.
Yeah. So then for Jade, so the fourth why is it important that her advisor is more up to date on the appropriate investments and approaches than Jane is?
That's their job. And that's the expectation is why Jane would go to them.
Yeah. So then why is it important that Jane hires them? What does she get out of that?
I think she gets their experience, their insight, and their management prowess.
Yeah. So this is good. So we started with five whys. Typically what didn't quite work exactly how we want, but typically what happens is we dive a little bit deeper. We start getting a feeling of, and I didn't word the questions probably exactly correctly, but you start getting a feeling of what Jane gets out of it. So generally dive deeper into that emotional response. So things like a lot of it, what are answers I would hear from advisors are things like, why is financial planning important to Jane? So she understands more about the roadmap, investments, et cetera. Well, then why is that important to her? So she doesn't have to be making these active decisions all the time. Well, why is it important she doesn't make these active decisions? So she can feel more confident and enjoy her life with her kids and family. So thinking of those five whys, like you want to go to the last few answers that you gave. And then those are really good points to turn into messaging on the website, turn into marketing messaging. A lot of times we hear that when you do this with an advisor about their practice or with a client even, they'll come back to responses of, so I can feel more confident and feel more free in retirement. And those are words that I don't see often on advisor websites. But when you say, as an advisor, my number one goal is to help you feel more confident in your retirement, build your legacy, protect your, whatever it is, then those words you get from the five whys and those resonate most with prospects and clients.
No, I think that's great. That's, you know, they really kind of, I think it really kind of helps advisors and financial advisory firms, hopefully, get back to why people do want to actually partner with them and use them. And I think it can be seen as a grounding tool, brings you back to kind of home base. This is why we do what we do.
Yeah. And a lot of times it feels like, oh, this answer is stupid, or that advisor's kind of like zone out when I ask this question. And then I ask again and again, I say, just stick with me, please. And once you get to those last ones, absolutely, instead, you might not want to hire a writer right away or make a quick tweak or something or change how you talk about it, but it can make a lot of impact if you take those words that your prospects are using and put them right on your website.
No, it definitely does. Definitely does. Thank you so much for joining us today. Hopefully this is one of many in the future, but yeah, I think you've given kind of not only myself a good refresher, but also all the listeners kind of really an update and something to start looking at their website and their social media presence in a different way. Love to ask you our closing question here. From your experience, what's your take on active management and where have you observed it making the most significant difference? And I would imagine it's probably going to be actively managing your website or your social media presence, but would love to hear your thoughts.
My first thought, active management, not for me. I am not good at it. Someone else do it for me, please. But taking it to the website and the social media approach, think about where your clients are at. Don't try and do everything. If I was an advisor today starting a practice, I would actively be thinking about doing one webinar every month or every quarter and just trying to drive prospects and referrals to that. And then taking that content and cut it up and post it on social media, split it in different ways. So when I think of like active advisor marketing or whatever, that's kind of what I think of is really centered and focus on, say, a webinar and then split that up and push that out. It feels a lot more active than you would be, but that's kind of what I think of like when it comes to like growth or active marketing type stuff, as opposed to investments, which I don't want any hand in.
No, that's great. That's awesome. And that's great advice. Love to hear how people can find you, because I'm sure there's going to be a bunch.
Yeah, absolutely. Feel free. Find me on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/in/Matt Kress. If anyone's listening, MATTKRESS. Those are S's in Sam, S's in Sam. Twitter or X on Matt Kress as well. Or email me, just matt@mattkress.com. Feel free to reach out. I love this stuff. So happy to be here.
No, that's great. Well, thank you again, Matt. And now we get to move on to my favorite part of the show, which is 60 seconds with Matt Kress. Let me know when you're ready.
Love it. I'm ready.
Nickname.
Kress or Matt Kress.
Hobby.
Obstacle course racing.
Hidden talent.
Played professional table.
How many countries have you traveled to?
Probably like 13 or 14 now.
Next destination on your travel list.
Over the Azores in Portugal.
Best professional advice you've received.
Enjoy the people you work with. If you have a boss, make sure that you respect them. Like they're a big mentor of yours and you're always learning from them, but always surround yourself with smart people with where you work.
If you could eat only one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Khao soy from Northern Thailand.
What's one question you think all clients should ask their financial advisor?
Why do you do what you do? Understand more about what makes them excited and gets them passionate about their work.
Most rewarding part of your job?
I just love helping people achieve their business goals and grow.
Favorite way to get active?
Whatever feels like play. I love running with my wife and friends or chasing around my kid. Anything that feels like play.
Whether you're a seasoned advisor or just getting started, the Active Advisor brought to you by Harbor Capital offers professional insights for the financial advisor community. Visit us at harborcapital.com to learn more. And don't forget to subscribe to the Active Advisor on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts to stay up to date on investment trends, tried and tested research methods, and what your industry peers are up to. From all of us at Harbor Capital, thanks for tuning in.
And now for important disclosures. This material is for informational purposes and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or adopt any investment strategy. The opinions expressed are as of 15th of February 2024 and are subject to change. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the views of Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. The information and opinions contained in this material are derived from proprietary and non-proprietary sources deemed by Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. to be reliable and are not necessarily all-inclusive and are not guaranteed as to accuracy. This material may contain forward-looking information that is not purely historical in nature. Such information may include, among other things, projections and forecasts. There is no guarantee that any of these views will come to pass. This material may not be representative of the experience of other individuals. Reliance upon information in this material is at the sole discretion of the viewer. This material is not legal, tax, or accounting advice. Please consult with a qualified professional for this type of advice. Investing involves risk, including the risk of loss. Stock markets are volatile, and equity values can decline significantly in response to adverse issuer, political, regulatory, market, and economic conditions. Fixed income investments are affected by interest rate changes and the creditworthiness of issuers. As interest rates rise, the values of fixed income securities are likely to decrease. Specific companies and issuers are mentioned for educational purposes only and should not be deemed a recommendation to buy or sell any securities. Any companies mentioned do not necessarily represent current or future holdings of any investment products. Harbor Capital Advisors Inc. does and may seek to do business with companies covered in this podcast. As a result, listeners should be aware that the firm may have a conflict of interest that could affect the objectivity of this podcast. This material is prepared by Harbor Capital Advisors Inc. All trademarks or product names mentioned herein are the property of their respective owners. Copyright 2023 Harbor Capital Advisors Inc. All rights reserved.